Hello all across the Bill Michaels Sports Talk Network. Kevin Holden, CBS 58 in Milwaukee, stepping across and filling in for Bill for one more day. Bill gives me some gifts from time to time, and I think these last 2 days have been an absolute gift. You've got the Packers having polished off the Bears last Thursday night, preparing for the Vikings. You got the Brewers in a pennant race. You got the Badgers undefeated and climbing the AP poll, and I get to sit in. Tell me this isn't a bad time of year. Tell me this isn't a great time to talk sports. This is fantastic. You've got so much going on if you're a sports fan, and if you play fantasy sports, it's even worse or better, right? You know what I'm talking about? You know, everything I'm watching last night, I'm looking at like fantasy teams, and you know, I had Mike Fiers. Pitched an inning last night, gave up 9 runs, 5 homers, had him on 2 fantasy teams. I was less pleasant to be around in that moment. Anyway, the combination of fantasy and reality have been a lot of fun. So we appreciate you listening across the network. We hope that you'll share some thoughts with us today about a couple of different things, the Brewers and the Packers, as we get ready for Green Bay and Minnesota on Sunday at Lambeau Field. And as the Brewers get themselves ready for a pennant chase, for a playoff chase, maybe is the better way to say it. Because, folks, every day that the Brewers continue doing what they've been doing is a day closer to actually getting one of these spots. I mean, this went from, hey, the most optimistic among us maybe still thinks they have a chance, to, oh yeah, maybe we can see a path, to, oh my goodness, this could be happening. And again last night, the Brewers take care of business against the Miami Marlins. Trent Grisham had a 5-hit game. And the Brewers did what they had to do from a pitching standpoint. It wasn't the cleanest pitching game ever. But Jordan Lyles was once again tremendous in only 4 1/3 innings, as Craig Counsell has decided to employ his September-October pitching strategy, which is get those starters out fast. And it's working. They've now won 4 straight games, the Brewers have. They beat the Marlins in the first of that 4-game set last night. And Craig Counsell has got this bullpen in a tremendously good position. He's got this group of guys in about as good a position as you can have. He does not have the horses that he had last year in the bullpen. You can't play a 5-inning game and then go Hader Jeffress Knebel and then just put it to bed, right? That was what it was last year. That's kind of where this bullpenning thing came from, which is you work to get a lead early, and then you let the three-headed monster in the bullpen just take care of business from there. It's not quite the same for him this year, but he's got this bullpen in a pretty good position. So Joe was asking this question. He was asking about the members of the bullpen that you trust. So here's a question, and give us a call on this, 855-830-8648. Which members of this bullpen do you trust the most? Now, Hader is off the table, right? Hader is the number one answer to that question. Of course he is. Even if he gives up home runs, Josh Hader is still an elite relief pitcher. That's not a question. Who after Josh Hader are your trusted guys in that bullpen? So we'll leave that out there. Give us a call here. We've got some time, and we'll discuss that. But back to last night and the Brewers and the Marlins. So a couple of things happen in this game that are of significance. One is Yasmani Grandal, once again, hits a home run at a very opportune time. The Brewers were trying to put the Marlins away. Excuse me, I got a little frog in the throat here to start the show. The Brewers are trying to put the Marlins away, and Grandal hits a home run to center field in Miami, and he's on fire. And you know, you've seen Grandal now for a full year. You know what you're getting with Yasmani Grandal. You've got a savvy, smart catcher. There are streaks, I still think, defensively that he goes through. You remember last October when he was a Dodger and he was having trouble hanging on to anything, but he is still a consistent guy. He's a guy the pitchers praise, and maybe most of all, he's a guy that when he gets hot with the bat, is capable of being a middle-of-the-order type of bat. He can carry a team. He can carry an offense for a bit of a stretch. In this offense, he doesn't have to, because Christian Yelich is capable of carrying a team for literally seasons at a time. Thank you very much, David Stearns. And by the way, that thought occurred to me watching Yelich in Miami last night. You think that Christian Yelich is walking around Marlins Park, walking around the tens of fans that were there, walking around the Art Deco designs, the oranges and yellows and greens and blues, and the bobblehead museum and the fish tank behind home plate, and the fact that the Marlins are 40 games under 500. Do you think he goes in there now and looks at that and says, I'm in an alternate universe, I could still be here. I could be hitting 35 homers a year for a team that's 40 games under 500. Like, I just wonder, I don't think Yelich is the kind of guy who would gloat. But I think that Yelich has probably had a quiet smile about him during this series. Because it's September, and he's on a team that's fighting for a postseason spot, that second wild card, which is open to half the league. But still, the Brewers are in it. As opposed to being on this Marlins team that is simply thinking about the future at this point. And I guess in that alternate universe, his 35, 40 homers and, you know, whatever it is he would be doing in Miami would help that team win games. I get that. But you know he's got to be happy with what happened. You know he's got to be pleased to not be there in you can hear a pin drop park, because that's what it was last night. And my guess is that's what it'll be for the remainder of the series. You get one fan in there screaming, go Brewers, and you can hear it. And Fox Sports Wisconsin, by the way, last night was not ashamed to pan the stands. You know, there are networks that won't do that. We've heard stories at Yankee Stadium when those seats behind home plate were so expensive that they couldn't be filled, that they were bringing people down and sitting them in those sections so that your sight lines watching the game on TV, there were fans in the shots. Makes it look like there were more people there than there actually were. And Fox Sports Wisconsin had no qualms about it last night. They're just panning the empty sections. Oh, there's two guys in that section. One over here. Oh, there's five in this section. That's packed, man. Brewers fans, you are and you have been year after year after year ardent supporters of your team, major supporters of your team. You supported them when they lost 100 games. Yeah, it's not the same, you know, fervent. Is fervency a word? The same fervor? Is
sure.
That the word? The same fervor.
What did I say yesterday? I made up a word too.
You did. What was that? We may have to go back and look.
Specialness or something.
we're making our new dictionary here.
Whatever we want.
Your fervor. There you go. There's your word. Fervor. Word of the day. Supporting this team has been there year to year. And of course, you're not going to fill the park quite as much if the team doesn't have a winning record, because this time of year, your attention will be elsewhere. But you support them. Miller Park has never been, ever, in its 20-year almost history, what Marlins Park was last night. And thank you for that, because that would be a mess. Even if the team is bad, there is some optimism, there is some support. You still go, you tailgate. For baseball, which is a rarity, by the way. For folks in Wisconsin, if you don't know, that doesn't really happen for baseball in other parks. So I think there is this great appreciation, and this is where my bigger point is here, from Christian Yelich and from the rest of the Brewers, there is this great appreciation at this moment for what Milwaukee is and what Milwaukee has. And the Brewers have given back to you in the sense that they are competing for a playoff spot. But you could be Miami. Watch it tonight. Watch it tonight. Pay attention to the stands and the fact that it sounds like a golf match, a golf tournament. I mean, that's we're talking baseball in September, and I get they're out of it, but still, that's a tough situation. Brewers win once again, so that's four consecutive wins for the Brew Crew. And we're talking about that bunched-up field competing for the wild card. Cubs, of course, took care of their business against the Padres. But the rest of the field, every time you win a game, you're helping yourself against the rest of the field. Joe, I don't have the numbers in front of me here, but Arizona lost last night, did they not?
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah, I believe they.
And I saw this too. I don't know if you realize this. J.R. Radcliffe put this out yesterday from the Journal Sentinel. The Brewers have tiebreakers over pretty much everyone that they're trying to deal with in the National League right now when it comes to wild cards. So if you're able to tie with the Washington Nationals at the end of the day, you get to go to Miller Park for that one game wild card. If it's the Mets, you have the tiebreaker over the Mets. You can have that one game wild card at Miller Park. The Chicago Cubs, if you tie with the Cubs, you took the series from the Cubs altogether. think it was, what, 10-9? You get to have that at Miller Park.
Yeah.
So when you combine an easy schedule here in the month of September for the Brewers, and then the fact that they have tiebreakers over all these teams, which is quite ironic considering how this season has gone, the Brewers are kind of in business right now. They are in the driver's seat. It's almost like it's kind of theirs to lose. Yeah, they're two games back, yeah. But considering there's a lot of things that are in favor that can help them and that can actually put them in a much better spot, just if you can win a few baseball games and now you got a little winning streak going, yeah, it kind of feels that way, all things considered.
Right? You never felt so good about a team that doesn't, at the moment, have the second wild card spot, right?
No, right.
The Cubs, the Cubs are a dangerous team, and they have been, and they will be, but they play seven times against St. Louis down the stretch. Brewers play the Cardinals three times this weekend, and that's it. So the Cardinals will be nemeses, there's another word for you, for the Cubs in these last few weeks of the season. The other thing that the Brewers did, and I touched on this a second ago, the Diamondbacks lost, right? If you think of this as the Daytona 500 and you've got all the cars in a line, you know, each team is a car racing for that finish line. The Brewers just pulled ahead of everybody else except the Cubs in this race, right? This is significant because when we talked about the Brewers being fourth or fifth in the standings for the second wild card, you have to catch everybody else. You have to play better baseball than all of the teams in front of you. You got to race faster to catch them, right? At this moment, the second wild card is Cubs at 77-66 and Brewers at 75-68. And then everybody else. The Brewers have pulled ahead of everybody else. Now, they're up by a half game on Arizona and one game on Philly and two games on the Mets. So it's not a great lead. But the point is, if the Brewers play to the exact same record as Arizona or Philly or the Mets, they can't be caught. That's significant. Now your focus is on one team, Chicago. Two games separate the Brewers and the Cubs still. So if there's anybody out there that thought it was wasted last night because the Cubs won, please don't think that, because the Brewers are ahead of Arizona now and ahead of Philly and ahead of the Mets. They are in a position where, in again, using the race analogy, Cubs are in those sights directly ahead. Everybody else is behind. So all the Brewers have to do is hold that line, right? Just play the same as those guys behind them, and they can't catch you. Now you still have to play two games better than the Cubs, minimum, to catch them for that wild card spot. But it's a lot easier to chase one team than it is to chase four or even two. Brewers and Marlins, game two of that series tonight. Cubs are out in San Diego. I am not wearing a Padres jersey today. I wore one yesterday. But in my mind, I am wearing a Padres jersey all week.
Don't you have like a retro Padres jersey?
Yes. That's actually one of my favorite jerseys. You're talking about the brown and yellow and orange?
The brown and yellow, yeah.
That thing is
the worst colors ever for a team.
So hideous.
Brown and yellow.
It's hideous. Honestly, Joe, real quick story. That's the reason I started wearing and sort of hoarding jerseys. The Padres were the reason. That specific Padres jersey, that it's mid-80s. Just terrible brown with that orange and yellow around it. And it's one of those things where it's so hideous that it's great. It's so bad, it's awesome. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And that's how this whole trend started, was I was wearing it and people would look at it and go, oh, that is awful. But it's kind of great. You know, that sometimes in fashion that happens. I'm no fashion expert, but sometimes that happens. That's what led to all these jerseys, the mid-80s Padres. We're all Padres fans rest of the week, and we're going to return with more Brewers. Give us a call, 855-830-8648. Your most trusted bullpen members. Let's get to it next on The Bill Michaels Show. The Bill Michaels Show, Kevin Holden, CBS 58 Milwaukee, stepping in for Bill today. Happy to be talking Brewers with you. Brewers beat the Marlins last night. Brewers pull ahead of Arizona, and they're two games behind the Chicago Cubs still for that final wild card spot. I see the numbers. I see the playoff percentages. I understand that it's not, they're not the Dodgers. They're not the Braves. They don't have a 90-something percent chance of making the playoffs, but this is bringing out the hope and optimism, isn't it? I mean, it's, you know, not to sound all sunny, but I mean, they were at 5% or whatever it was before the Cubs series or after Thursday night's game. I think their playoff percentage was 5% to make it, and they're into the 20s now. And with every win, it's going to increase significantly because there's not a lot of time left. So every win is pretty meaningful for this Brewers team right now. And that's where they are. After last night's game in Miami, the Brewers have won 4 games in a row. Wow. I see a tweet. This is a video from Michael. I'm going to retweet this. If you guys are following me at 321QKevin, 321CUEKevin, Michael sent a video here, and I'm retweeting it, of Marlins-Reds game last week. This is nuts. There's nobody there. Nobody. And I guess it's, you know, Marlins-Reds is probably a tougher scenario because the Reds are also not contenders this year. But, yeah, that'll tell you a lot about the park right there. Okay, so we were talking about this win over the Marlins and about the fact that Craig Counsell has reached that time of year where he is depending heavily on his bullpen. He's got a lot of guys. There's 12 or 13 guys out in that bullpen. And he's depending on them to get a lot of outs. And in most games right now, the majority of the outs. For example, Jordan Lyles went 4 1/3 last night. Impressive innings. He looked good. That curveball, by the way, super impressive. And I think it's one of the biggest reasons why he's having success as a Brewer, you know, to try to pull the curtain back on why all of a sudden he's successful. I don't think there's any voodoo going on here. I just think he's spotting his curveball really well. And it's tough on a hitter. If you hit that bottom part of the zone with the curve and the top part of the zone with the fastball, he's making it hard on guys right now. So Lyles went 4 1/3 last night, struck out 3, gave up just 1 earned run. But 4 1/3 is 13 outs, and so Craig Counsell is depending on his bullpen to get 14 outs. They did. They gave up 2 runs. Freddie Peralta on the stat sheet is listed as allowing those 2 earned runs in 2/3 of an inning. But you have to go through a lot of relievers to get 14 outs or 16 or 18. You remember last year, there was a playoff game where they pulled Wade Miley after a batter. So the bullpen's going to get 27 outs that day or more if you play extra innings. So who are your most trusted Brewers relievers that are not named Hader? Because he's everybody's number one. 855-830-8648. Give us a call and we'll talk about it. So I'm going to give you my number one option. And I think it's going to surprise you a little bit. But the guy that I think Craig Counsell trusts the most, and this isn't to throw the ninth, because again, I'm just kind of throwing the ninth out with Josh Hader. Josh Hader is going to throw the ninth, right? That's done. So who do you trust to get other outs that are not ninth inning outs? And I think Counsell's answer is Alex Claudio. And everybody's like, oh, no. Because Alex Claudio got roughed up a little bit earlier this year, and a lot of folks were very down on him. But the Brewers acquired him very specifically for a purpose. He's a left-handed bat, a left-handed pitcher who can get guys out. He's not just a one-out pitcher, although he can be used in that situation. Craig Counsell's using him in all situations right now. Doesn't matter the inning, lead, trailing, whatever. Claudio's the rubber arm, right? I was joking with somebody the other day that it's like, oh, it's only 10 to 2. Go get some work, Alex. Go, 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 go. I think that was Baby Tausch, Bill Schmidt, who said that. Claudio's pitching all over the place, and he's doing this in all situations. He might throw some in the fifth, the sixth, the seventh, the eighth, whatever. And I'd be curious, and you may have a better handle on this, Joe, than I do, but I think Claudio's numbers of late have improved quite a bit. Relievers are tough. You get a rough stretch and it affects your ERA long term, but I think Claudio's a dependent guy.
If you remember, Alex Claudio early on in the season took some abuse out there.
Yeah.
And I remember a lot of people were complaining about Claudio. Oh, this guy's trash. You gave up a compensatory pick for him, blah, blah, blah. Since May 31st, Kevin Holden, Alex Claudio has a 2.21 ERA.
Really?
Since May 31st.
So I think, honestly, that may be the guy that I would depend on the most.
Over 36 2/3. And it's not like he's just gone out there and has gotten a third of an inning every single time. He has pitched full innings. He has pitched more than a full inning.
Yeah.
He again, like you said, he has come out in so many different situations and has been able to just go out there and get outs. He hasn't been lighting stuff up. He's like another version of Brent Suter. He doesn't throw hard at all, but batters aren't used to that kind of speed.
And as I say, he's throwing disco balls. You familiar with the term, throwing disco balls?
Not that, no.
Because his pitches are in the 70s. Hey! He's throwing disco balls. 77, 76, 78.
75.
75.
Studio 78.
But that's what Claudio's been doing, right? Yeah. Like that. You look at his profile, like you saw him as a Texas Ranger, and you're like, you know, he's a guy that might be better than just a one out against a lefty guy. He may be throwing his little disco balls at everybody and getting outs, and that's what Council, I think, over time has learned. He's dependable. He can get lefties out, righties out. He just sort of does his thing, right? So to me, that might be the guy. And part of that is Claudio has been, as you mentioned, Joe, with those numbers, good numbers, that he's been good for a really long stretch now. He's been good for, 3 months plus?
2.5.
Yeah, 2.5 months.
2.5 months.
Where he's been very highly dependable. If that was his ERA for the season, guys would be salivating, right? I mean, fans, you know, put him in there, put him in there. So that's one guy for me. I am a fan of Drew Pomeranz as a reliever. I don't know if I would, I suppose he, if you're asking me for three guys, I suppose he's one of the three guys. I suppose. I reluctantly doing that. But I like two things about Pomeranz. He can throw you a lot, because he was a starter, he's stretched out, he can throw a lot of innings. And there's enough veteran savvy there that he's not going to go through rough stretches for long.
I have liked what Drew Pomeranz has been able to do for the Brewers. But I'm still salty that it took Mauricio Dubon to get him.
Now, if Ray Black turned into Jeremy Jeffress, would you feel better? You'd feel much better about that.
Much better.
Yeah.
When Ray Black, he looked good last night.
Right.
Pitched well.
He ain't Jeremy Jeffress, though.
I love the heat from Ray Black. I think I'd feel better about Ray Black if Derek Johnson was coaching.
I think I'd feel better about like 12 of these guys.
What I mean, though? It's no offense to Chris Hook, but I think at the end of the day, Derek Johnson goes to Cincinnati, and look what happens to that Reds pitching staff.
That's right.
Lee Tunnell goes over to Cincinnati. Look what happens to that Reds pitching staff. I just feel like when it comes to, you know, reclamation projects and guys that have the raw talent, but they're just not able to find it on the mound and they're not able to hit their spots with it, I would have felt a lot better with a move like that if Derek Johnson were still here, because I'd feel confident that Derek Johnson could get a guy like Ray Black into a spot where he could succeed.
That's right.
I feel more skeptical about that with Chris Hook.
Yeah, because the raw stuff is there. I mean, you see the numbers that, you know, the radar gun, and you're like, whoa, hey, 97, 98. That's a good-looking fastball. But he reminds me of Jordan Hicks in St. Louis. Mm-hmm. Jordan Hicks is like throwing off the charts fast, but they make contact against him. And people make far too much contact against Ray Black based on his raw stuff. I mean, you're going to throw 97, 98, 99. They shouldn't be making as much contact as they do. He should have Hader-esque strikeout numbers.
He should.
Just based on the speed. So that, to me, is interesting.
It could be a release point issue, too.
I could see that.
It could just be how these guys are able to pick him up where he's releasing that ball.
And hitters, these are professional hitters, right? If they're able to time a certain pitch or expect a certain pitch, then their chances of making contact goes way up. I mean, in other words, if Black throws an effective slider at 86 to go with an effective fastball at 97, now you got
exactly. You
got a mess. Now you got Josh Hader. So that's significant. Okay, so let me get three. Claudio.
Pomeranz. Now take your pick.
Ugh.
I had a hard time this because I'm right with you. I'm going Claudio and Pomeranz.
Yeah.
I'm tempted to go Brent Suter, but we haven't had a large enough sample size with Suter in the big leagues. But if you go back to what he did in rehab, he was almost unhittable.
Yeah. And he's been tremendous over this very short sample size. Friday he looked great. Sunday he looked great. And he's giving them some key innings in key situations. I don't know about most dependable, like right now, though. Man, because Jeffress is gone. Who is the third?
See, Matt Albers for a while was very reliable.
Maybe that's the guy.
But then over the last month, he's had outings where he's given up three runs, four runs. That's not reliable. Junior Guerra is another one.
Yeah.
I mean, Junior Guerra has these stretches where he's very reliable. When the splitter is on, you can't hit it. But then he has these spurts where he gives up a run here, two runs here, run here.
All right, so let's...
I'll tell you what. You ponder that.
Okay,
well, ponder that some more.
Yeah, yeah.
Because we got Pete Doherty coming up next.
Yeah, right. So we're going to talk a little Packers with Pete Doherty, and then I'm going to have to come up with a third option here. So
it's tough.
Thank goodness. I may take this whole commercial break to ponder this here. Pete Doherty joins us next on The Bill Michaels Show. The Bill Michaels Show, Kevin Holden, CBS 58 in Milwaukee. Stepping in, spending the day talking Brewers and talking Packers with you. And yes, on Tuesday, 5 days removed from a game and 5 days before a Packers game, still got our focus on the Green Bay Packers because what a great opening win it was. What a momentum-stealing kind of win it was to beat Chicago in that first game of the regular season. And now you've got to duplicate the feat against a tough Minnesota team that comes to Lambeau Field on Sunday. And Pete Doherty from the Green Bay Press-Gazette and PackersNews.com joins us right now. And, Pete, this is fun because 5 days out and 5 days before, it means we're right in the heart of analysis season, right? This is when we can really break down some things, both on the win against the Bears and on the Vikings team that's coming up. And now you've got some tape on the Vikings. Your thoughts on their first performance in that win over Atlanta?
Yeah, pretty impressive. They can run the ball. That's basically how they won that game. What did Cousins throw, 10 passes, right?
Yeah.
I think the difference... One difference in this could be the Packers probably have a pretty good run defense. Now it's only one game and all of that. But if you look at their personnel, the two Smiths, neither one, they both rush the passer pretty well against the Bears. Neither one's a high end pass rusher. They're not Von Miller or anything like that, but they're complete players. They're big guys. They're good run stoppers. I think the Packers probably will by the end of the season, will be a noticeably better run defense than Atlanta was. So that probably gives them a better chance, at least in an early season game against the Vikings, assuming Minnesota's going to keep trying to feed Dalvin Cook the ball.
And I think the other part of playing good defense against the run, too, is that at this moment, it feels to me like the Packers can't get gashed against the pass the way they were even a couple of years ago. The evolution of the secondary has been a fascinating thing to watch because it went from that low point, Julio Jones in the NFC title game, to where we are now, where you've got this combination of a Jair Alexander, Kevin King when he's in there is making things happen, and now Adrian Amos in the mix as well. That, to me, easily the most improved position on this roster overall, right? I'm not crazy in thinking that.
No, and you can include Savage in that too. He's just an explosive player. They have more athleticism there than they did. Ladarius Gunter, they had him covering Julio Jones, and Gunter, he was a tough guy and all that stuff, but he ran like a 4.7 something. You can't have a cornerback who runs that. You can't compete. And I still think a huge key will be for the season is if King can stay healthy and play in most of the games and still be playing in December. That defense is just noticeably better when he and Alexander are both out there. Then they're really strong on the outside. But I think you got to throw Savage in there too with Amos. They're just way better at safety. Amos is a really steady guy, and Savage brings a dynamic element back there that they've been lacking since Nick Collins' career ended.
Pete Doherty, Green Bay Press Gazette and PackersNews.com, joining us here on the Bill Michaels Show, and we've been. Looking offensively at what the Packers did against the Bears, again, you start the season against, I consider the Bears an elite-level defense. They were tough, definitely, in that opener. And part of that is stopping the run, but I see Jamal Williams in the 0 yards, and I'm trying not to get too nervous about that just because of the level of defense, but Minnesota's defense pretty strong as well. Do you see it getting maybe a little better for Jamal in this second game?
My guess is that the Vikings defense is not as good as the Bears. I don't think they have the great players the Bears have. And as good as Kendricks is, I'm thinking Roquan Smith is better. They don't have anybody at Khalil Mack's level. I don't think either of their tackles is as good as Akeem Hicks. So I would think the Packers will run the ball a little better. The run game is going to be the slowest thing to come, you know, because in the preseason these guys just don't play at all. And there's a lot of timing, even though they ran a zone scheme predominantly under McCarthy. There's, you know, these offenses and these zone schemes are all different depending on who's running them. There's a lot of nuance and idiosyncrasies in each scheme. So there's a lot for the players to learn to get all that timing down and all that. So I think they run it better now. I mean, obviously, you know, I mean, Williams is a good football player and he's a guy you want on your team, but he's not, I mean, he's definitely not Aaron Jones with the ball in his hands. So they still, they need to get what they can out of Jones, but you can't get him too many touches or he's going to get hurt. That's his history already, just 2 years into his career.
We've seen in this game against Chicago something that we have not seen in many, many, many years, which is this excitement of getting a coach his first win as a Packers coach, because McCarthy was around for a long, long time. So that experience of getting the win for a coach and that sort of momentum boost that comes from it, we finally saw Thursday night. And sure, there's all kinds of excitement in the locker room. You can hear it in the postgame speeches. My question is, it's been 5 days. Is that something that you crash down from, or is it something that they can keep going and have that excitement going into the second game? Can they maintain that?
You know, I don't know. It's something you probably, to some degree, maybe just like the bad things, you just have to move on and go on to the next one. I mean, I was looking at this yesterday. You know, in the opener last year, Tampa Bay beat New Orleans 48-40, and Tampa Bay ended up firing their coach at the end of the year and winning five or six games. I mean, the Colts started 1-5, made the playoffs. The Houston started 0-3, didn't make and made the playoffs. Miami started 3-0 and didn't make it, and they fired their coach. So weird things happen in the first couple weeks of the season too. Teams don't have their identity. The coaches are figuring out their players and what they do well and what they don't. So I still think the Packers offense is going to be it's going to be fits and starts because they're, you know, they have a new scheme. But I would guess this week should be at least a little better than last week, because if nothing else, they've learned the lesson that they want to keep the tempo going faster, and they spent a little too much time at the line of scrimmage or a little too much time in the huddle last week.
Pete, I want to jump, since you mentioned Miami, I want to jump topics for just a second, because the Dolphins situation is just a hot mess. I mean, there was a loss and then all of this talk afterwards about players asking to be traded, you know, asking their agents to request trades after the first game of a regular season. Where I'm going is, there's been the thought of that Miami is playing for down the road, doing what Cleveland did a couple of years ago. That's not my concern so much as it is the thought that players can think in that realm after one game of a regular season, right after we saw Antonio Brown do what he did. Doesn't it seem like there's just a little streak of the NFL from a player standpoint trying to feel a bit like the NBA, where guys are, you know, it could be a game in and already you're thinking about playing for a different team and forming different teams, you know, let's go join the Patriots kind of stuff.
Yeah, it's really ugly after a week down there, but, you know, players don't have, in the NFL, there's so few that have the leverage that the NBA's stars have. You know, Antonio Brown can work it out where he can get out, but how many players can really do that? There's just not many. All these guys can go request trades. Team's not going to trade them. What are they going to do? They can't afford to sit out. You know, their NFL players' careers are so short. Players are more interchangeable than they are in the NBA. So I think they just don't have the leverage, but it does, you know, it's a highly emotional reaction for the players who are, they're mad. They were embarrassed with the way things went. You know, I just don't think any of those guys has any leverage to get themselves traded. And, you know, you'll learn something about Flores too, if he can, you know, hold this thing together and right that ship and win a couple of games, you know, then that'll say something about him too.
Pete, as in the job that you're in, did you like having a Thursday opener? Did you get some rest over the weekend?
Loved. Yeah, it was great. It was great. Yeah, I was able to go golf on Saturday, and I watched a lot of football on Sunday, and it was great. Just like quarterbacks and journalists, they love those Thursday games.
I mean, it's true because it gives you 10 days in between, but there's probably no better situation to do that than week one to week two, because if you, like the Eagles game that's coming up, there's going to be a Sunday game against the Broncos and then a Thursday game against the Eagles, which means all your work gets condensed into 3 days. But to do it to start the season, I almost feel like everybody should play on Thursday to start the year. It was great, wasn't it?
Yeah, you know, it was really nice. Now, it still kind of condensed things because you have all the season preview stuff that you're doing, and that kind of got condensed because you didn't have a couple extra days. But it's like having a mini bye. And it's funny that the Packers actually have two of those this year because they play in just a few weeks. They play Philadelphia on a Thursday and have another weekend off. So those are nice breaks. I think the guys who play the more physical part of the game, I don't think they're digging it because that's not a lot of recovery time for the body. But the quarterbacks and the people sitting safe up in the press box, I think, like it.
You got that right. Pete Doherty, Green Bay Press Gazette and PackersNews.com. Appreciate the insights. We will see you this weekend at Lambeau.
Okay, thanks for having me, Kevin.
Pete is always there with the Packers. And, you know, I'm not joking about that. I mean, this 10 days between games, guys are going to do stuff day to day to day for months, so to get a couple of days off is a good thing. Pete Doherty joins us on the Schneider Orange Hotline.
Schneider hiring drivers right now. They work hard, you work hard, they treat you fair for 80-plus years. They've been getting it done. Call them at 844-PRIDE or go to schneiderjobs.com.
The Professor, Mike Clemens, plus a little touching on Monday Night Football. Two games to talk about next on the Bill Michaels Show.
Green Bay Packers News Flash. In Green Bay, here's Mike Clemens.
The Packers had a brief practice yesterday as they get ready to host the Vikings. Minnesota had no problem beating the Falcons on Sunday, 28-12. The Vikings are now consulted by Gary Kubiak, former Texans and Broncos head coach, who Matt LaFleur worked for in Houston.
When you're watching the tape and you're watching Minnesota's offense, you can see a lot of similar concepts, especially they ran the ball. I mean, would they throw the ball like 10 times or whatever it was? But yeah, there's a lot of similarities between what they do and some of the stuff that we do.
The Packers are pleased on how they held the Bears offense to just 3 points. In their second year under coordinator Mike Pettine, Green Bay is doing a better job of disguising their defense. Inside linebacker Blake Martinez.
Every guy is playing different spots. There's so many moving parts that you never really know who's dropping, who's blitzing. Z's dropping on some plays, Preston's dropping on some plays, Fackrell's dropping on some plays. We got D Lyman dropping on some plays, and so it's just all over the place where sometimes they're guessing, and we know that, and we go and make plays like we did on Thursday.
And the Packers added linebacker B.J. Goodson last week, who had less than 48 hours to get ready for the game in Chicago and got some snaps on special teams.
I'm the type of guy, I'm going to prepare as if I'm starting every single snap. So we were going over from the packages that I would be in there in on, and if there was a emergency situation. So it was, we were kind of going over everything.
Goodson was acquired in a trade with the New York Giants, who played poorly in a 35-17 loss to the Cowboys. Goodson says he's grateful to be in Green Bay.
Man, like I was just saying, you know, it's a great culture to come into. These guys hunt, and they show it on tape. And, you know, like I was just saying, you know, I'm a hunter. So I feel like I fit in great here. The culture is awesome here. I'm excited to be here, man, and I'm grateful.
That's Packers linebacker B.J. Goodson. In Green Bay, I'm Mike Clemens on The Bill Michaels Show.
The Professor, Mike Clemens, giving you the latest from Green Bay. The two games last night, Monday Night Football. How about the Oakland Raiders? Sans Antonio Brown. How about Derek Carr only having 4 incomplete passes all day? How about Josh Jacobs taking care of business against the Broncos? You ever wanted a reason to root for the Raiders? I think you have it now with AB's defection to New England. And that Saints-Texans game, my goodness, that was fun, wasn't it? I mean, I don't know how you guys feel about the Saints, but man, what an ending to that game that was. That's one of those that got reaction in the newsroom.
Knock on wood if you're with me on the Oakland Raiders.
Oh, is that a thing?
Yeah, that's a thing.
Why do I keep missing
how
your references?
Oh, Kevin.
Seriously?
Did you watch Hard Knocks?
No.
Oh.
No, but I heard that exact phrase used during the broadcast right after they showed John Gruden counting backwards by threes. I don't know if you heard that. They had a thing on him. He was like 86, 83, 80, whatever. He was like counting backwards by threes. Yeah. And then they said that exact thing that you just said, knock on wood if you're with me.
Yeah.
I missed it.
There was a whole, I mean, HBO did this whole bit during Hard Knocks, which, by the way, Hard Knocks was a disappointment, I felt, because considering all the egos and all the drama that was going on, I felt like it wasn't covered enough.
Right.
But one of the funny parts of Hard Knocks, Gruden, every time he's showing stuff to the players on film, he's pointing this stuff out, and he says, okay, we got to do this, we got to do this. Knock on wood if you're with me. And then everyone in there. And they just, he just kept doing it. Like, no matter where he was, knock on wood if you're with me.
Yeah. That's fantastic. He was, you know, I was working in Florida when he was the Buccaneers coach. So I have some experience with him. And I absolutely loved covering him. Loved it.
Oh, I'm sure.
Because, you know, we talk about how, you know, McCarthy used to go in there and just give you nothing in the when he's at the podium. Gruden was the opposite. He'd give you anything. He would talk about anything. Hey, John Gruden, tell me about onions. And you get 45 great seconds on onions.
Knock on wood if you're with me.
Okay, so my third reliever here before we get out of this hour. You know what? By default, I'm going to have to go with Matt Albers.
Ugh.
Right? Because I don't think there's another option.
You gave me a scenario, though, with the Cardinals.
Yeah, if you're facing Goldschmidt and Ozuna Saturday night in St. Louis in the eighth inning, and you can't use the guys you've talked about. No Hader, no Claudio, no Pomerantz. Who do you use? Manager? See?
I might go Brent Suter.
I mean, right
call
now.
Call me crazy. It might be
moment,
Brent Suter.
He's hot right now. Wow. You're telling me that the four most dependable relievers on this team are all left-handed?
Yeah.
Think about that for a minute.
Yeah.
Four, and they're all left-handed. That's a little unbalanced. Folks, we've enjoyed it. Stick around with us. Plenty more to come in the hours to come on The Bill Michaels Show.